Welcome to the weekly podcast from the Church of England. This week saw the opening of the next five-year session of the Church of England's Parliament, the General Synod. Her Majesty the Queen gave an address at the opening at Church House in Westminster on Tuesday.
Your Graces, the convocations of Canterbury and York, duly called together in obedience to our royal writs, are on this day joined together in accordance with the Synodical Government Measure 1969, and the House of Laity is added to them in accordance with that measure, so as to constitute the 10th General Synod of the Church of England. Thank you, Archbishop, for your welcome and for setting today's proceedings in a wider historical context. In the 45 years since the meeting of the first synod, much has changed. The last synod will be particularly remembered for the way in which, after prolonged reflection and conversation, even in the midst of deep disagreements, it was able to approve the legislation to enable women to be consecrated as bishops. This new synod, too, will have to grapple with the difficult issues confronting our church and our world. On some of these, there will be many different views. And I am sure that members of the synod will pray earnestly that the gathering in January of the primates of the Anglican Communion will be a time when together they may know what is God's will. St. Paul reminds us that all Christians, as ambassadors for Christ, are entrusted with the ministry of reconciliation. Spreading God's word and the onerous but rewarding task of peacemaking and conflict resolution are important parts of that ministry. So too is the Church of England's particular vocation to work in partnership with those of other faiths and none, to serve the common good in this land. To this end, I was pleased that one of the first events that Prince Philip and I attended in 2012 to mark my Diamond Jubilee was a gathering of leaders of all faiths at Lambeth Palace. The presence among us today of the preacher to the papal household would not have been possible but for the notable advances since 1970 in cooperation across the great Christian traditions. There are many other examples: the covenant between the Church of England and the Methodist Church, the recent visit of the Ecumenical Patriarch, the participation in this synod of observers from so many Christian traditions, the newly created ecumenical community of St. Anselm at Lambeth. Each of these serves as a reminder, both of the progress already made and of the journey that still lies ahead in the pursuit of Christian unity. Your Graces, each new synod inherits from its predecessor the same weighty responsibilities. Collectively, you must continue to draw deeply on your faith, judgment, and life experiences, as well as that precious Anglican tradition of unity in fellowship, to discern the future path of the Church of England. At the beginning of this new synod, as you put your hand into the hand of God, my prayer is that, as we sang in that joyous hymn this morning, his glorious light may shine ever on our sight and clothe us round, the while our path illuming.
The Queen's speech is available on the Church of England's website with the link in the description below. The business of the new synod began with presentations on reform and renewal and climate change, along with debates on a range of issues, including the migrant crisis. Aaron Arora, the Director of Communications for the Archbishop's Council, spoke to journalists John Bingham from The Telegraph and Madeline Davis from The Church Times to get their perspective on the events. Aaron started by asking them about how they saw the focus for the next 5 years.
I guess one issue that's probably in a lot of people's minds is the shared conversations on sexuality and the fact that it's expected that out of that will come something for Synod to actually debate and vote on in terms of perhaps a change in the church's teachings on its policy on gay relationships.
I think one of the things which was a dominant feature in the last Synod was that there were some very clear, almost unofficial party groupings which came out very strongly in the women bishops this year, and it'd be very interesting in this synod to see how those groups which still exist and in some cases have expanded will step into the limelight over the next few years as issues such as the human sexuality debate can really get going.
You both talk about groupings. What's your reflection on the Queen's speech to Synod yesterday around those kind of issues and how the church is going to deal with them going forward?
I think she was trying to encourage Synod to look back on the eventual success of the women bishops measure and perhaps to take heart from that and appreciate that that was an issue which seemed intractable at some points and which eventually agreement was found. So I think she was kind of trying to encourage them to take that spirit forward into the next Synod.
It was very noticeable that the Queen didn't use the word sexuality, but it was the elephant in the room, the one thing which everybody, and no doubt including the Queen, knew was the issue, the looming issue, which will have to be dealt with by the Synod. I thought it was very striking as well that she used some of those phrases that the Archbishop of Canterbury particularly favours, words like reconciliation, peacemaking, mediation, very much are being made part of the DNA of the Church of England, if that's not a terrible phrase.
And what did you both make of the papal preacher yesterday? There was lots of generally very positive reaction to what he said. What did you make of it?
Perhaps because I'm a boy from Belfast, I thought it stood out actually as the most memorable thing on the first day. To hear the papal preacher talk about Cranmer and Luther and talk about how Catholics should celebrate and benefit from the Reformation seems fairly revolutionary. Of course, in the Francis era, it could almost pass unnoticed because it's the kind of thing that we hear from the Roman Catholic Church. But it's becoming very, very clear that those things people thought about for centuries, even doctrinal issues, just have moved to the side now. And perhaps it's because the churches generally are kind of circling the wagons in the face of a much greater secular challenge.
I'd heard him say something similar at the HDB leadership conference this year, where he also talked about our persecutors already see us as one. And so that was familiar to me. But I think the fact that he was saying it in front of the Queen and referencing these people, which at one time the Catholic Church would have regarded as heretics, was pretty radical thing to say, as John says. And I think his focus on let's come back to Jesus and let's recognise that most of the people around us are living as if he never existed has some resonance to what's being discussed today, which is public perceptions of Jesus. What does the public that the Church of England is witnessing to believe about this person?
I think also the symbolism, the visual symbolism that was very clear there. You have the preacher to the papal household standing in the pulpit at Westminster Abbey, just a few feet away from the Queen, who is Supreme Governor of the Church of England because of a lot of history going back to Henry VIII. But also even a few minutes before, a few seconds before he got to his feet to do to deliver the sermon, Bishop Libby Lane read the gospel reading, and he clearly was present for that.
What do you think have been the things that have stuck out so far in terms of the debate?
We've just had the debate on the migrant crisis, and that was actually an opportunity for a lot of people to highlight how much the church has done practically in Europe and in the UK to welcome and support refugees. So I think that will have left Synod members probably feeling quite encouraged that social justice-wise the church is doing something. And it also, I guess, will repeat some of those tensions about the extent to which Synod criticises the government and what kind of response they might expect back. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of unfolds afterwards.
And I think the vote we've just had on the refugee issue, which included a clause in a motion, which the Archbishop of Canterbury made clear amounted to backing military action in some circumstances to create safe spaces for refugees. I think in the long run, that will stand out as a significant policy decision that the Synod has taken, and it will be welcomed by many in the church, but won't rest easily with all.
As we discuss this, we've still got two particularly big debates to go, one on the use of church buildings and the other on perceptions of Jesus. I think you've both written up these stories already in one way or another on the back of the Synod press briefing. Do you expect anything new to come out, and particularly, I think, around perceptions of Jesus and a slight feeling perhaps from the authors that their views perhaps weren't fairly represented in some of the coverage?
I mean, one of the Synod members, the new Synod members, mentioned last night that she would have liked a more extensive debate on the report. So I think there's a huge appetite amongst a lot of Synod members to discuss evangelism, and perhaps a fear that sometimes that duty of the church can get a bit lost in debates on wider social issues. So I think there's a huge appetite to kind of get back to basics and think, how is the church and how are Synod members telling people about Jesus? So it does feel in the chamber that there's a lot of enthusiasm for evangelism.
I think there are lots of people in the church who, when a difficult issue comes up, they like to find an opportunity to complain about the media or try and blame it all on the media. I mean, the perceptions of Jesus report was a classic example of the genre where a load of extensive polling was carried out, was very, very selectively quoted, and some of the figures were twisted and conflated in the report, and then they seemed genuinely surprised that people wrote it up in a way that didn't quite accord with their preconceptions. But I have to say, I mean, perhaps it's a case of no publicity is good publicity. No one would be talking about that report had it not been written up, if journalists hadn't picked out the fact that it shows very clearly that a lot of people in Britain are put off by Christians talking to them about Christianity, and that is something which Christians have to grapple with, not shy away from.
I was actually surprised when I looked at the report by the really high percentage of people that said that they believed in the resurrection. So although I think it's definitely fair to look into perhaps some more worrying findings in there about the impact of evangelism, it's still really significant that it's so polarised between people who don't even think that Jesus was a real person and people think that he came back from the dead. So I'm hopeful that the Synod members get to tease that report out a bit, because I'd agree with John that it would be good to hear a bit more about it, exactly the methodology and what it means for the church.
John, you've just spoken about publicity and the church and publicity and what people are talking about. Your views, both of you, on the Just Pray campaign and the film that's gone out, I think we've just hit 1 million views today. Some people criticised us for it, others commended us. From your own perspective, what would your reflection be?
It's a classic case of there's no such thing as bad publicity. There is possibly the best thing which could have happened from the Church of England's point of view was for someone to ban this ad and do so in such a cack-handed manner as they've done, to unite the Equalities and Human Rights Commission, David Cameron, Boris Johnson, Stephen Fry, Dawkins, the whole across the piece behind them. It's been absolute publicity gold for the Church of England, and you know, I'm sure you should be very grateful to Digital Cinema Media for their work on that.
Mad.
I'd agree that, you know, the statistics have already been cited in cinema about just how many people have seen it who probably wouldn't have done otherwise. I do think it fits into a larger story, basically about some religious illiteracy, actually, amongst both local government and commercial organisations, where there's just such nervousness around religion and, you know, a fear that people of other faiths would be offended. Generally, those people then come out and say, we're not offended at all. But I think there's just a lot of nervousness, which probably is best solved by education rather than kind of criticism. But I think it just fits into that broader piece about, you know, increasing irreligion in the UK and the fact that people who are making these decisions are kind of floundering a little, really.
And so a last question, picking up on that. You're both professional religious journalists. John, I know your brief's a little wider. Picking up that point about religious illiteracy, how difficult does that make your job?
I write from the basis that you're writing for a secular audience, but an audience which is, in the case of our readers, I think, well-informed, intelligent, well-educated people who understand and who are more religiously literate, probably, than the average person in Britain. But it is a growing factor that you have to deal with, and it's a generational thing. It's certainly clear that among younger people, that there isn't the awareness of certain cultural references that are sort of absolutely imbued with religion that there once were.
It's probably slightly different for me in that I'm writing for primarily a sort of a church audience. I think in the same way that some public bodies and commercial organisations have some religious literary issues, I think on the other side, sometimes we react to government initiatives or to legal cases, perhaps on the assumption that Christians are under attack and we need to be a little bit more subtle and unpick, you know, what certain case outcomes were, rather than just sort of taking a blanket approach that, you know, Christians are under attack. So I think it works kind of both ways.
John Bingham and Madeline Davis there with Aaron Arora. Finally, one of the presentations that featured in the Synod Business looked at public perceptions of Jesus, a research report which looks at factors associated with evangelism. Mark Russell, the CEO of the Church Army and a member of the Archbishop's Task Group on Evangelism, spoke about the presentation and the implications for the church.
I've seen the material on a number of occasions through Hope, but also I'm a member of the Mission and Public Affairs Council. So it was good to hear the whole synod receive this material today. And I think the Bishop of Bristol is right. Facts are friends. And I think we need to read this report carefully. We need to look at what it says. We need to think about the areas which encourage us and also the areas which challenge us, and then work out as a church how do we take that information to inform better how we communicate the good news of Jesus Christ to the world around us. I mean, I think the broad brush of the report is that there are a significant number of people in this country who are trying to communicate their faith to their friends, but for me, as an evangelist and as the leader of an evangelistic organisation, the key stat for me is that like only 1% of people come to faith because of a Christian leader. And yet if you look at how we as a church spend our money, you know, most of our training resources are being ploughed into training leaders. Now the question I want to ask then is, are we strategically equipping those leaders to equip their congregations to reach their friends and neighbours with the good news? Because that's how people are discipled. So it was like 90-something%. And I think if you add it up, the conversations with friends and family and even with strangers, about 50% of those conversations led to people thinking about faith in a new way. So as the leader of a missionary organization, I've been trying to say, well, how do I take that research that we heard this morning and do something about that? So we've just today launched a program called Faith Pictures, a free resource to the church, a six-week program which Archbishop Justin came to launch and endorse today, which is about helping people be more confident to tell their story. I mean, what this research shows us is that Christians need to be able to tell three stories: the story of Jesus, the gospel, the story of what Jesus and the gospel have done for me, and the story of what Jesus and the gospel can do for you. And that's what this research is telling us. We have to help our church be more confident in sharing the good news. The reality is that the Church of England is facing a dramatically different landscape. And many of our clergy, and they've told me this, feel that they have been trained for a different paradigm. Our challenge as a synod and our challenge as a church is to release people into ministry and into service and into discipleship. That means we've got to equip people better, be more confident in themselves and the gospel. Church Army's done a major piece of research into fresh expressions of church, funded by the Church Commissioners, and that research is extraordinary. It says that over half of all new types of church being planted are being planted by lay people in their spare time who've not had any theological training, who've not had any bishop's license, and if we want to see the church grow over the next 10-15 years, then we have to inspire even more people to do that, because we, quite frankly, as a church, don't have the resources, either people or money, for stipendiary clergy in the places we need to have them today. So there are big challenges for the synod, strategic challenges, that we must grapple. That's why I stood for election, because, you know, it's much easier to sit on the outside and complain and whine and moan, but actually the synod is the place where decisions are taken. And my favourite TV programme in the world is The West Wing, and the President Bartlett said, decisions are made by those who show up. This synod has shown up. Over half the synod is new. I'm excited by that. There's lots more younger faces. There's lots more women. Together, we've got some tough decisions over the next 5 years to make the Church of England fit for purpose for the missionary challenge we face.
And so in terms of public perceptions of Jesus, the work of the Evangelism Task Group that's been talked about over this synod, to use one of Bartlett's favourite phrases, what's next?
What's next is February. The Evangelism Task Group will report. And we've been doing a substantial amount of work, and I'll give you a little sneak preview. My own particular area which I've been working on with the Evangelism Task Group has been young people and children. We've heard some shocking statistics over the last couple of days. An 81-year-old is 8 times more likely to go to church than an 18-year-old. I can tell you that over half of our parishes have nobody in them under the age of 18. The average age of our church is 67, as opposed to the average age of the nation, which is 47. And even more shockingly, over half of all 18 to 30s in the Church of England live inside the M25. So the Evangelism Task Group has a massive challenge to help inspire us. And let's be honest and be frank. We don't do evangelism, all right? Or we better not do evangelism to stop the Church of England from closing. That's actually not why we do this. We do it because the people of this country need to know that God thinks they're fantastic and that they need his love and his grace and his goodness in their lives. And that's what will come forward in February. The Evangelism Task Group has got work on that. We've got work on difficult housing estates in urban areas, and we're doing work on helping change the public perception of our church. We have to try and help change the view of the people of this country towards the church, and that's going to be another big challenge for this synod over this 5-year term.
Mark Russell there. And all of the audio from this session of General Synod is available now on the Church of England SoundCloud account. That's it for this week's podcast. Thanks for listening.